Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and joining me today is Mads Christensen. Mads,
hello.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's been a while.
Yeah, and I think March was the last
and
time.
And in that while, you've no doubt written a whole bunch of extensions.
I have.
So the way it works is Mads goes and writes a whole bunch of, is constantly writing extensions, mm-hmm. and then every now and then, either I ping him or he pings me, and you come on the show and show us what you've been working on.
Yeah, so I'm going to just show some of them.
Okay.
Because I looked at sort of what I've done this year.
You could get your own show, Mads' extensions.
Almost, because I think I write an extension every 2 weeks, like on average in this calendar year. So there's a lot of stuff, and we're going to skip some of them.
All right.
And look at sort of the
You'll
the
show
more
us the
general,
highlights, the good
yeah,
ones.
Yeah, the highlights.
All right,
yeah.
Just the good ones.
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
Yeah, right. So let's just jump into it.
All right.
Okay, so let's take a look here. This is an extension that I wrote called File Icons. So one thing that is, you know, my extensions always have boring names. Mm. I realize this. They always just have them. They always just describe what they are, right? There's nothing. Yeah. So file icons add icons to files.
Okay.
Right? It's pretty simple. But you undoubtedly, if you're a Visual Studio user, you've noticed that some files, they don't have an icon in Solution Explorer. They just mm-hmm. have sort of the default white icon. And Visual Studio says, I don't know what that is.
Right.
And so here I have languages. Check this out.
Ooh.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So what is happening here is that this extension I have maps file extensions to icons. And some of the icons Visual Studio already has built in, and so it just referenced the existing icons. Mm-hmm. And some icons are for something that is not supported at all in Visual Studio, and so they're custom. And so here we have a list of a lot of the custom ones.
And so did you make up these icons? So you decided that... Oh, well, .pug obviously is a dog.
That's a Jade file, yeah.
Okay.
So the so these are like the official icons,
okay.
right, for these different languages or file types. So this is what they look like. This is, but this is very, very nice. It's, you know, if you're dealing with other file types mm-hmm. than, you know, the usual suspects, this is just nice. And actually, so here's the GitHub repository. So all these extensions that I write, they're always open source. This one is called File Icons. And if we look at just the different files here, there's over 350 file icon mappings. So these are, there's a long list.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's something that I, you know, ultimately I want this just to be in Visual Studio. I think mm-hmm. it's nice to have. So even though there might not be support for the language, right? At least we can show the icons to say, okay,
right.
we know that this is a Perl file or a Haskell file.
And then if you wanted to use your own icons, you could just edit the source code? Or is there a dialogue to do that mapping yourself?
Well, you cannot do that mapping, unfortunately. But let's take a look here. So, but I kind of build in a, like a thing. So let's say, let me just add a file here. Let's add something that doesn't exist, right?
Okay.
So test.robert.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So where did that go? Let's see here.
Somewhere under T, at the very bottom.
Yeah. So, okay, so here, this has that, you know, default icon. We don't
right.
know what this is. But you can right-click this thing, and at the very top, you can report missing icon. So if we click that, it basically, what, is the internet broken? It appears to be, okay. I'm not online. Yeah, I can see my internet's not here. Anyway, that's not important. The important part is, what it does is that it takes you to GitHub, and it opens an issue saying, missing support for .robert files.
Okay.
And then I pick that up, I find out, okay, what's the appropriate icon, and I release a new version of the extension that automatically gets into Visual Studio, right? Visual Studio auto updates extensions.
Right.
And so a week later, you're gonna open this project, and all of a sudden you have an icon for .robert files.
But you could add the ability to add your own custom icon if you wanted to, right? Could you?
No.
No. Oh.
I don't think you can.
Okay.
this is all like something that has to be registered with Visual Studio.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So it can't be swapped out at runtime. It's
no, unfortunately.
Hard coded. Oh, yeah. Bummer. All right.
Yeah. So that's how Visual Studio works in this case, and that's why I think this extension is so interesting because mm-hmm. it just lists, like as I said, 350
yeah, cool.
of them, and like every week the list grows and grows.
Right.
So that's kind of nice. Now. So that's kind of cool.
You are going to create a .robert file and put my face on it, right?
I should do that. I should do that, like a little Easter egg.
Yeah.
Now, for some of these files, like we don't have in Visual Studio, there's no extension or there's no native support in Visual Studio for a lot of these languages, right? Like Haskell and Scala and so on. And it would be really nice if we could get at least syntax highlighting and maybe even snippets for these files. And so let's open this Perl file, perl.pl right here. So what Visual Studio 2015 has, which I think very few people are aware of, is that it has support for text-made bundles. And a text-made bundle is something that was born for the text-made editor, you know, years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's basically either a JSON or an XML definition file that describes a language. So what are the keywords? What are, you know, how does syntax highlight a language?
Yeah, cool. Right?
And also it can have snippets and other things. And so Visual Studio actually has support for this. And so I have an extension called the Syntax Highlighter Pack that basically just adds a lot of these text-made bundles. So for instance, for Perl, let's just zoom in here, you know, I can get snippets.
Ooh.
And so there's one called test. And you see here, and we even get like the full snippet. I can move between these here, right?
Nice.
So that's kind of cool. So I get full syntax highlighting for languages that are not traditionally supported in Visual Studio.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see this extension married with the file icons extension provides like a bunch of really nice features to VS for working with languages.
So did you, how many languages did you get supported for in that extension?
I think I'm close to 50.
Wow.
It's 45 to 50, I think, right now.
And did you have to create the XML files yourself, or did they exist somewhere?
They exist. I actually don't know how to create those files.
Okay.
I could learn. Like, it's basically some regexing and stuff you
okay.
need to specify. So it's doable.
But somebody already did the work.
Someone did the work.
Okay, cool.
And when you open a file that Visual Studio has no idea what is, like it's plain text, like the .robert file.
Mm-hmm.
Now because I've had this extension, I don't see it right here. But if I just installed the extension, I would get a little alert that says, hey, you can now, when you open a file that we don't know about, you can right-click inside the editor and report missing language for .robert files.
Cool.
And just like the file icons, if you click this, it will open GitHub and create an issue on the GitHub repo for this. And I think I've at least 10, if not more, 20 languages have been added by people raising the issue on GitHub
through
this button right here.
Very nice.
So it's kind of a cool way to add features.
Yeah.
Like the users literally ask specifically for the individual languages. So that's kind of cool. So that list is going to keep on growing. Yep. And those are also, so Visual Studio supports it, but also like Sublime Text, Visual Studio Code, TextMate, Atom, Brackets, all these different editors all support TextMate bundles. So there's a lot of them out there. But I don't just blindly take all of them.
Yeah.
You know, I have to test them out. Do they work? There are limits in what Visual Studio supports.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to test each individual language. Okay. So that was those two extensions. Let's create a new file in here. You know, like you have .gitignore files and all that. So there's also .tfignore. So let's just add one of those. You see here it actually, of course, it gets the nice icon because I have the file icons extension. But this file is used for me to, when I, you know, commit to source control, I can say ignore certain files and folders. And the problem is, how do you know that whatever you type in this file actually hits files and folders that you have? Let me illustrate.
Hmm.
So I'm going to just zoom in here. So let's take a look at this. Actually, this I should have put this file in the root of my project. So let me just do that. Let's just close it. So here we go. So in the root of my project, I got a few folders. I got views. Let's say I want to ignore views.
Mm-hmm.
I would simply go in here into my tfignore and write views. Okay? Now let's say I made a mistake. I made a typo here. It gets grayed out like this.
Ah.
Okay? So I can fix it like this. And if I hover it, it will show me exactly what files it hits.
Cool.
Isn't that nice?
Yes.
And, you know, and I, of course, I can just search in here, and it's super fast.
Nice.
And I can also, if I then click one of these files here, you see Solution Explorer?
Uh-huh.
It synchronizes.
Nice.
So I can very easily find and identify these files.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really nice. And if I have something that doesn't exist, right? This doesn't exist. Right. This file, for instance. I get a light bulb, so I can say, hey, remove this specific entry, or remove all non-matching. So it will go through my entire ignore file, whether it's tf-ignore, git-ignore, npm-ignore, like there's a lot of .ignore files. And it will just remove all the entries that don't point to anything.
Excellent.
Right, so you can clean it up and verify that everything is as tight as it can possibly get.
Cool.
So this is an extension called .ignore.
Okay.
Like not dot, but the, you know, the dot. .ignore. Okay, so let's close out all of this. Let's look at another language that's in here, Markdown. So this is an extension called Markdown Editor, which, again, very creative naming. It's an editor for Markdown. And it's actually really cool. It supports the full GitHub flavor of Markdown, plus an additional some additional syntaxes. And instead of it just being a plain text editor with a preview, which is sort of what you see here, you have the text on the left, the source, and you see the browser rendered HTML on the right. We have a lot of things we can do here. For instance, here's a checkbox list. If I hit Control Space, it checks it for me. I don't have to manually go in here and, you know, mark this with an X, right?
Okay.
I have a shortcut, Control Space. Also, if I want this to be bold, Control B. Right. So these sort of text editing we know from Word and whatnot are carried over here. So that's really, really nice. I automatically get completion if I'm writing a list here. So foo bar, hit enter, it will inject the three dot for me here. So we can do something like this. And notice how as I type, the preview updates. I don't have to save or anything. It's as I type, which is really nice.
Does it teach you the Markdown syntax, or does it expect you're familiar with it?
It does not teach.
Okay.
So, but it does a little bit, actually. So let's look at a feature here. So notice here now I scroll. As I scroll the source, the preview scrolls instantly with me. So I always see the preview of what I'm currently editing, which is nice. But here's where it helps you. Let's say I want to add an image to this file. And say, I'm just going to create an image here. I'm going to just do a, I have a little image selector tool here. So let's grab this, copy it. So now I have an image in my clipboard. I can simply just go in here and just paste it in, Control V. And it will now ask me, where do I want this image? Let's just call it file. It's automatically created, put on disk, and referenced. And we even have validation here. So if I make a typo, I get an error. So that's kind of nice.
Cool.
I could also go the other way around. Let's say I have an image already. So let's see, file. I can right-click this, or not right-click. I can use the light bulb, say, convert this to an image. And it will then ask me, well, where is the image? Well, in this case, I put it here. You know, and I get the same thing. And you know, I can do a lot of other things in here, convert it to a link. So all these special syntaxes, there are very easy shortcuts to do that.
Sweet.
So I learn as I go along.
Yep.
And of course, there's full syntax highlighting as well. So here I have a C# code snippet. You know, I can see you get sort of a nice view here. So you can add custom style sheets, all these sort of things you would expect from a Markdown editor. And it's this is my primary, after I build this, and there's a something called Markdig, which is a .NET Core parser for Markdown that's relatively new.
Okay.
It's like by far the best on the .NET platform that supports all this. And that's what's under the hood, right? So it's super fast, all async, very, very nice.
Very nice.
Yep. All right. Let's look at another one. This is an extension that has been out for like some years, like 3 years or something like that.
Okay.
But recently I took over the sort of stewardship or ownership of it because the original author is no longer maintaining it. And I asked, can I take it over so I can maintain it? And it's called multi-editing. I've kind of renamed it to be multi-select mode just because I have to have a boring name, right, apparently. But it allows you basically to have multiple cursors.
Oh.
Isn't that cool? So this is So it already has a lot of downloads. People really love this.
Yeah. How many can you have at a time? As many as you want. Wow.
Yeah. There's no limit to this. Isn't that cool?
That is nice.
Yeah. So it's been out for years, as I said, and it has it has a decent amount of downloads, but not a lot of people know about this. And this is something we keep hearing, that people love from, let's say, Sublime Text, that they have this capability of having multiple carrots and multi-selection.
It's better than having to figure out the replace all to use to get text like that in multiple places.
Right.
Nice.
Right. So let's go back here. Let me open another file here. It actually doesn't matter. I'm just going to pin it. You know the pinning feature of Visual Studio Air? That's really nice. You just pin it right there, right? So now it stays there. It's always to the left.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, though, that if we look at my project here in Solution Explorer, like, it's all expanded. Look at all this stuff, right? I'm just expanding all this. So this is might be how I leave my project. So now I'm done for the day, and I leave my project like this. Mm-hmm. I come in the next morning and open the solution again, and it's like, oh, now I need to like collapse everything and find it.
Yep.
You know this problem?
Yep.
It's more of a nuisance. Maybe a problem is a little bit of an overstatement, but to me, that's sort of annoying. I want the fresh look of it. I want all this stuff collapsed. Right? I don't want anything open, unless I pinned it. If I pinned it, I want it open,
okay.
but everything else should just be closed.
Can you anticipate my feature request yet?
Something to do with restart?
Roaming.
Roaming? Is this might be some, this
roam?
Might be support? It could be.
Could be.
I'm not certain.
Yeah.
I don't know how
Wouldn't
settings
that be
are
awesome
roamed.
If that roamed.
I could I think if you use the Visual Studio APIs for storing settings, which I do. They may be roamed.
Ooh.
It's not something I can, as an extension or other,
right,
determine.
Right, it'd have to be something that is in settings.
Right.
That'd be cool.
But it could be depending on where the location of the setting is.
Yeah.
I should look into that.
Okay.
Anyway, let's close this.
Anyway, finish showing the feature. I jumped ahead.
So now you see it's all expanded. Right?
Yep.
But let's just let's close the solution. Okay, the solution is closed. Nothing out of the ordinary. Until we open it again. The exact same solution. Notice that now it's only my file here that's open. The other file that was open is now closed.
Yep.
And everything over here is collapsed. Okay?
Right.
So I get a fresh start. Pretty simple.
Cool.
And it's like, it's one of those things that it's always kind of annoyed me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I built it. Not a lot of people downloaded this. I mean, it's for people that are like an OCD like myself. I don't know. But this might be my favorite extensions of all time.
Okay. Yes. Wow.
Yeah. Something as simple as this.
All right.
It's in my top five, I'll say that.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's called Clean Solution.
Okay.
Clean Solution. And there are tools options. You can say, do you want the projects to be collapsed? Do you want solution folders to be collapsed?
Yeah.
Do you want Solution Explorer to take focus when you open the solution?
Mm-hmm.
And I do this, I set that to true. I want Solution Explorer to have focus because oftentimes when I open something, like Team Explorer is open or the properties window, and I just want Solution Explorer to be
right.
open. So now it does that. And that's kind of very nice.
Yep.
It kind of just gets it makes it ready to be used,
right.
I guess, you know? Yeah.
Hit the ground running.
So, speaking of that, you know, sometimes you create a new file and there are comments in there.
Mm-hmm.
Or you take over a file that someone else wrote and there's a lot of comments on how to do it and how, you know, to teach you how this file was built or whatever, right?
Yep.
And so, for instance here, there are some comments in this file. There are three comments, actually. This is a C# file. It could be any file. It doesn't really matter, but it has comments in it. So I can say Control KQ. And just get rid of all the comments.
Ooh.
Isn't that neat? But the way it happens is, where do you go? Here we go, comments, right? Remove all comments.
Uh-huh.
Only remove the XML.comments, or remove everything but the XML.comments.
Okay.
Right, and you can also remove regions.
Mm.
This is something I get asked about every now and again.
And then it saves them in memory until you save the file? When do you lose it for good?
Well, yeah, it updates the text buffer, so the file is dirty. You have to save it to make the change.
Got
right? You can always undo it.
Yeah.
There's no difference between this and other text edits in the editor.
Yep.
But remove regions does not mean remove content of the region.
Right.
Only remove the region lines themselves,
yes.
right? The
yep.
region and the end region. Yeah. So it's one of those things that, you know, I actually use way more often than I thought. I did this for a specific exercise that I did at a conference at one point, but I find myself using it at least once a week.
Okay.
So I kind of like that. But speaking of like editing in the text editor here, right? Let's make some formatting mistakes. Okay. So let's say here, this is a badly formatted document right now. I think we should probably zoom a little bit so people can see. Okay. This is very, very bad, and I should format the document. And so to format the document, I don't remember the shortcut, right? So I go to...
Really? It's one of the few that I do remember.
I actually do remember it, but just for the case of the argument, let's say I don't.
There's like five I remember. That's one of them.
But it could be anything that I... Any command that I execute that has a shortcut associated with it, but I choose to find the button and click it with the mouse instead.
Okay.
Okay. In this case, format document, I'm going to click it with the mouse, and it formats the document. But at the bottom, it tells me, oh, I hit edit.format document, which has this shortcut.
Okay.
Okay. So it reminds me, if I want to learn what the shortcuts are for the stuff that I normally do, I'll look here, and now it goes away. So I set it to 15 seconds.
So,
do we do it again?
Go back to the edit menu. Because it tells you right there.
Right.
Okay. So you're repeating it.
Yes. Well, not every. Well, yes, but not everything is shown, right? Not every command everywhere has this shown. But even if it did,
there are commands with shortcuts, and the shortcuts don't show up in the menu.
Yeah, not all commands have menus, right? For instance.
Oh, okay.
But it will show you right here, right? And then we'll go away after 15 seconds. Yep. This gets, by default, 5 seconds.
Okay.
But I can always go in and see the history of the different things I did. Oh, I did that specific one a lot. I should probably learn that one, right?
Yeah.
And so this is just a tool if you want to learn shortcuts.
Okay.
It's sort of a very simple teaching tool.
Yep.
Right? If you want to, we know from telemetry of the Visual Studio usage that people don't use a lot of shortcuts. Like, way fewer than you would think, like two. Like the average is like two keyboard shortcuts per person, right? That they know.
Control Shift B is one of them.
Control C. So this is basically just a friendly reminder. Hey, there's a shortcut for what you did. You know, maybe you wanna learn how to use it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's like one of those small little nice helpers. And I always have it there because sometimes I actually don't know the shortcuts or something, right? So. Even though I try to use
but
as
it's
much,
nice if you it's keeping track of what you do and suggesting which ones that if you learn this shortcut you could save yourself quite a bit of time of hunting and pecking on menus.
Right.
All right, that's cool.
And there are settings you can specify whether do you want to print it out in the output window as I do here? Do you want like how long should the thing be in the status bar? Or should it never go away? You can also just have it all there all the time.
Or if you're asked 25 times and don't use the keyboard shortcut, it'll automatically move the mouse off the menu and force you to learn it.
That would be interesting. But you say, oh, maybe I just want the output thing. I don't want the status bar thing. You can also set that up.
Yep.
Right? So, you know, however you learn best, is you can configure this for it.
Cool.
All right. So these were all like general purpose extensions. But I am a web guy. Like,
yes.
You know, deep down inside, I am a web developer and a web... I work on the web team, you know, so I have to do something with web every once in a while, you know, even though that what I showed here also works for all web developers, obviously, right?
Yes.
It works for everyone, I'd say. But I do have a few things that is interesting specifically for web developers. And I think at the show we did like a year ago, I think, I showed you the image optimizer, how to really compress and optimize the images in your project to save bandwidth or file size, you know?
Yep.
But there's another trick we use in web development, which is called image spriting, which is the process of taking, let's say, three images and combine them into one image, and then using CSS to move the background position to match just the that single image that's inside the large image.
Right.
And the point of that is that by serving only one large image, that's only one HTTP request instead of three individual ones. And so it's faster reload times, those sort of things, right? It's an optimization thing. But they're really difficult to do. Because one thing is you have to create the image by itself. You have to combine the images, basically. Mm-hmm. That's one exercise. The other exercise is, well, how do you write that CSS?
Yep.
Right. And what if you don't want to use CSS, but you want to use SAS or less? Then what? So these ones are icons. You see here, if I hover, you get a little icon here. So now I have an extension here called Image Sprite, or Image Sprites, because that's what it does. And I can simply say create Image Sprite.
Ooh.
And it will ask me, what do you want to call this? MySprite.sprite, that's fine. That's what it suggests. And here I get a sprite file, which is the JSON file. And a few things happen. It creates a PNG file, and then it optimizes it using that image optimizer. We can see that just happened right here.
Okay.
So that happened right here. 29%. So I create a PNG out of those three source files. And you can see it listed here. It has all three of them.
Okay.
Right? And it gave me a style sheet, a CSS file. So I can now include this as part of my payload, as my part of my CSS bundling mechanism.
Nice.
And okay. I now have what I need to do to consume this image sprite. But as I said, I didn't want to use CSS, potentially. I want to use something else. So in my sprite file, which is how I define this, I say, I want it to produce a less file. I can also, do you want a PNG? Should we have a GIF or a JPEG? What's the output?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I optimize the images, should it do it lossless or lossy? Lossy will give you more compression,
yep.
But you sacrifice quality a little bit, whereas lossless is no change to the quality.
Right.
So let's just keep it at that. Orientation, which way do we want it to go? Let's change that. Keep PNG. And here is the list of the files.
Mm-hmm.
So I can at any point in time add another icon and just add the entry in here. I can actually just drop it if I take an image file here and drop it in. So I already had this time, so it just gives me like a random string here.
Okay.
But I can just drag it in and it will be part of my sprint. Because as soon as I save the file, we can now see that I have a horizontal list here.
Yep.
And I have an image sprite less file created.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
So this is just one of those things that people don't do because it's too hard to do.
Right.
Not anymore.
No, it's easy.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So that is just nice. I like that. That's something that helps me, you know, right? That's usually why I write extensions, because I have a need for something, and then I figure out that I should probably write the extension. We're moving fast here through a lot of stuff. Have you ever wondered, Robert, when you're building applications, any type of applications, you're using packages that other people wrote?
I've often wondered about that.
And you know, it could be a NuGet package, it could be a Bower NPM package, but how do you know that, you know, any package that you use with that version of that package doesn't contain security vulnerabilities?
Ooh, okay. Right?
Think enterprise, or think, you know, where you want to have some restrictions on, you only want to use things that are, doesn't have any known vulnerabilities. I think that makes sense in most cases, right?
Yeah.
So, I built this thing called Package Security Alerts. Again, that's exactly what it does. And here's a Bower file.
Oh, so, look at that.
Look at that. So you get little alerts here about like some packages that have security issues. So this works for Bower and for NPM.
And where is this information stored?
This information comes from retired.js. So there's an existing repo that are being used for gulp files and for other Node.js, basically in the Node world, I'd say, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
But as part of that, there's a JSON file with all the definitions. Like, here are all the packages, and here are the ranges of versions that have vulnerabilities. And here are the link to where the vulnerability and the fix is described. Okay. And so we can say, is something a high security risk, or medium, or low?
So if that gets fixed, then that would go away at some point?
Yeah, we can fix this. So, so if I click this, it says, oh, this has risk level high.
Yeah.
Right? Oh.
So at the time, so let's say whoever wrote that package, they wouldn't fix 131, or would they just make a 132?
They would make a 132. That's like December like semantic versioning.
Right.
You have to create.
So even though it is a security vulnerability, you leave it out there and it's just no longer the latest version.
Right. They're actually good at then putting them down, taking them out of the like the NPM or Bower registries, but not in all cases. So for Bower here, it still exists.
Okay.
And if I click it, it opens the description of what it is. Yeah. See here, there's the complete description of it. There's even like PDF files and stuff to, not diff files, sorry, not PDF files, to show what the problem is and how how to fix it and all that sort of stuff. But usually the way to fix it is just to update it to the latest, right? So let's take that one and see that it goes away immediately.
Cool.
So this is just a very nice way to, you know, making sure. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you'll never see that.
Right.
Right. But it's something that's really nice to have. Just in case.
And what's the information icon? What does that tell me?
This one? Yeah. This one is a warning.
So okay, medium.
It has
okay.
medium.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Got it.
So maybe I should make it more clear in the message here. If it's higher medium, make it bold or something like that.
Yeah, because would you leave a medium security issue in your code?
Well, I would say no, you wouldn't. There's the low risk where it's like, for your information,
right.
if you use it in a certain way, which you may not do, then there could be a potential thing.
Right.
Right. I think medium is, there's something here, but it's it requires more effort to exploit.
Okay.
And then high is like, okay, you're just open to failure here. Yeah. So, but that's why you just click the icon, it takes you and you can read about.
Right.
This. So this extension makes no effort in trying to give you recommendations.
Right.
Because it's different.
It's just informational.
Yeah, it's different from each security vulnerability, how to mitigate it, and all those things. So, it's just for information, right? It's a packet security alert.
Alert. It's an alert.
And that's also the name of the extension.
Very nice.
So, that's kind of nice. Do we have time for one more?
Of course.
Okay. So this is an oldie but goodie. Mm-hmm. But it's been updated. It's one called Package Installer. Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at what that is. So if I right-click my project, I can say quick install package or hit Shift-Alt-0. And it gives me this thing. And it's basically a way for me to very quickly install a package from NPM or Bower or NuGet or TSD into my project. So so for NuGet, it installs a NuGet package just as it would have done if I went to manage NuGet packages and would search or use the command line to do install package and all that.
But if you know the one you want, like JSON.net,
right?
Which I've added, we've all added to projects over and over and over and over and over again. This is quicker than going to the package manager, although it by now shows up immediately.
Right.
But something like SQLite, right? If you know what you want, it just makes it a lot faster to go and get.
But as a brand new thing, we now have Yarn support. So Yarn...
Because you can never have too many package managers.
Right. And, well, the funny thing about Yarn is, let me explain to you what it is.
Okay.
It's actually pretty simple. It's an alternative to NPM. So it uses the NPM registry. Mm-hmm. The content of the packages that you get down are the exact same ones. But instead of using the NPM CLI tool under the hood, it uses the Yarn tool.
Okay.
Which is a new thing that Facebook and other like Google, I know the Angular team has been involved in. It's a lot faster, it does caching better, it does shrink wrap, if you know what that is, for how to lock certain versions so you can never, so the versions never slide based on semantic versioning. It does a lot of things better than NPM.
Okay.
And so just to show that, we can select that and we've still got full IntelliSense, right? We can say, give me jQuery. And it now says here what it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Installing jQuery packets from Yarn. And done, right? That was it.
Cool.
So that was kind of nice. So, just an update to one that I think last time I actually demoed this particular extension. But it's always nice. Like for me, it's like really important to always be up to date and maintaining these like a lot.
Right.
So I never let any of my extensions go stale. Like if you look at it, none of them have been updated. Like they're all like in the last month or last 2 months.
Right.
Cool. So they have to stay relevant and all this sort of stuff. So this is just to demonstrate that, we can react to the market. And when something new comes out,
awesome.
We add the support as needed,
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Always so fun. Always a great time.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
All right. We will see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.